Here's Kurt Z.
Thanks, Phil. Kurt Zimmerman, alcoholic. I was really excited about this meeting for some reason. You know, I know nothing about this meeting, but sometimes you just get a sense, you know, that I was just excited about this meeting. And I was thinking about it this morning down at the beach. I have a regular routine where I leave the house where Miss Linda is right now. And I drive about a mile and a half to my office where I'm sitting out. But on the way, I stop at the beach, and that's my morning routine. And I've been doing that for 13 years. And except for when we're out of town, I do it somewhere else. So one of the first things I thought about this morning, I thought, what do you really want to talk about tonight? You know, what's really pertinent and important? And about 20 minutes before I was coming on the Zoom meeting, there was a buddy of mine that called, went out with 13 years. And a couple months, maybe a month ago, another friend of mine went out with 27 years. And I was thinking about that. And I thought, you know, this is a topic. It's mostly not talked about in meetings because there's a lot of shame and guilt attached to it. With people that go out. And the reason I know this is I went out at 19 years. And my first AA meeting was 1979. So what you're not going to hear tonight is a lot of right and wrong. You're going to hear things like no mud, no lotus. God writes straight with crooked lines. We constructively review our day. We get corrective measures, off track, on track, off track, on track. This is how it works. It's not how I work it. It's how it works. And you can define that. So this is what I want to talk about. And one of the first things I'd like to say is, what has AA given me besides sobriety? Besides the release from the drive that I couldn't get rid of. I could not quit drinking. I had to be released. I want to make that really clear. One of the things that it introduced me to and gave me was the ability to not be suffering from what's not happening anymore. Now, I'll say it again. It gave me the ability to not be suffering from what's not happening anymore. This is a sober condition. This is what needs to be talked about, I think, tonight. You know, some of us, I'm sure there's a lot of people in here with long-term sobriety. In my view, everybody's a relapser. We couldn't have got here if we didn't relapse. We just moved the line out of AA. It's the obsession that outweighs every other thought and idea. That's how we got here. We relapsed. And when we put that line in AA, we cause separation. You got 40 years, I got 6 months. You got 3 days. We just cause separation. In our book, you know, it's really clear. It says what we really have, emphasis on really, is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And I really don't think it's a maintenance of a spiritual condition. That's just not my view anymore. I think it's a maintenance of a mental condition that tells me I'm spiritually sick. Because spirit, there's never been anything wrong with spirit. That's what makes it spirit. So what's happened here is, you know, I could start from the beginning. You know, I grew up middle-class family, Houston, Texas. I always felt like the black sheep. Linda and I were talking about this today. I felt like I didn't fit. When I was 12 years old, if a spaceship would have landed in my backyard and told me I was brought here as a teeny baby, it would explain more things than anything I'd ever known. I got into school. I started developing this condition we call the bondage of self. I'm not the condition. The condition is what drove me. That's why booze was my solution. Because it relieved me of the condition. It gave me a false sense of a mystical experience, which looked like this. Oh, okay, I can do this. I can do this. Bills, I'll worry about them later. Job, I'll worry about it later. Now, I didn't know I suffered from this. I had no idea because I had a lot of non-alcoholic and misinformed alcoholics telling me what my condition was. They go, what's wrong with you? Why do you keep doing this? See, and I didn't have an answer for that. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1986, I got here in 1979, stipulated by the court system. I had a slight propensity to attract people in uniform. And I was arrested, I don't know, you know, we say 25 times. I was arrested many times before I was 25 years old. And then I ended up going to the penitentiary in Texas on a robbery that was not really a planned robbery or anything. You know, it was I was drinking all day in a friend's bar, and they closed the bar, and I went down to the liquor store to get some beer. And the guy that was in the liquor store was Persian. And in 1979, they had some hostages in Iran. And, you know, he told me I couldn't read a magazine, and I told him he shouldn't even be in the country. And I pulled a knife on him and stole $63. And I went next door and I ate at the Steak and Eggs while the police interviewed him and stuff and just watched out the window. I mean, you know, 22 years old. So this is where alcoholism brought me to. It brought me to things like this. Ended up being given many chances, as most of us are, right? I had probation revoked four times before they sent me to the penitentiary. They just said, Zimmerman, we're giving up on you. You're not going to get it. They would tell me when I'd get out of jail, 3 month stint, 6 month stint, they'd say, hey, you cannot drink. Well, the problem is, I can't pull that off. I cannot pull that off. And I didn't know that. Because I'm being instructed to do something I can't do, but I don't know that I can't do it. So you don't know what you don't know until you know it. So I got I had a revelatory experience in 1986, June 3rd, 1986. It released me. I knew what it was. I knew what this thing you guys were talking about God was. It was very clear to me. This must be what they call God. It was just like, it changes everything. And the way I put it is like this. I asked a guy, Don C., to sponsor me about 13 years ago. And I called him on the phone. I said, listen, I want you to sponsor me. I'm going to be very clear why. I had got released again 13 years ago. With a much deeper experience. And I called him and I said, listen, I get this. There's a part in the book that says we step from bridge to shore. Really, we didn't step. We got carried, you know, or I did. And I said, when this happened in 1986, when I was placed on that shore, it was like a new island. And I thought I knew how to navigate that island. And I said, the pygmies almost killed me. I said, now I've been placed on that shore again. Grace, whatever you want to call it. And I said, I am not moving from the spot I'm standing till I have some guidance from someone who knows how to walk this spiritual dimension in this life. And of course, if anybody knows Don C., he said, well, we'll talk about it. And we ain't talked about it for 13 years, but we sure been connected. And so that was the journey. And the journey was out of the big book. I mean, the journey was little things like he would tell me to pause when agitated or doubtful. And he said, I want you to do that for a week. And I'd call him after the week. I said, well, that was worthless. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, you told me to pause when agitated and alpha. I said, I did. And I said, I didn't get a damn thing done all week. I said, I failed the test. And he said, that wasn't a test. He said, you dummy. He said, what I was trying to do is get you to see how much you function in self, this condition. I mean, why would we say a prayer? God, please relieve me of the bondage of self. If I couldn't be relieved of the bondage of self, why would I be asking the Creator for something that can't be given? This is what I'm talking about. And we talk about this all the time in some other groups that I'm a part of. We say, oh, I'm in fear today. No. Let me clarify my interpretation of fear. Fear is the highest intelligence of a human being. It takes no intellectual discourse. It is intuitive, instinctive. It's a survival mechanism. What we call, what I call fear, is mental anxiety. It's a narrative in your head you're listening to, or I'm listening to. And it's, I believe it. I think it's real. You lose your job, for instance. You're driving home and you're going, all of a sudden that narrative kicks in and it goes like this. Oh, hell, how are you going to pay the bills? You're going to be broke. I wonder how much money's in my checking account. You're carried off by this mental narrative. That mental narrative is shared between all of us. It's pretty hard for it to be me if you share it. I used to think I identified with people in AA. I do not identify with people in AA. I identify with the condition that's driving people in AA. Now, on another level, I totally identify with you. You're an expression of God's will. On that level, yes. We're all divine expressions of that will. Thy will is being done. It's happening right now. As Merton would say, it is in the midst of you, and you are in the midst of it, and it beats in your blood, whether you want it to or not. So this is what I missed at 19 years. And how Don and I talk about it is, see, I thought I was living by spiritual principles. What I was really living by was what the book says when it says we can be mean, egotistical, selfish, or we can be kind, considerate. See, I was playing both sides of the coin. It was whack-a-mole. That's how life went. It was a struggle. What I was doing was I was managing my life with my ego's interpretation of spiritual principles. There's a big difference. That spiritual, like I would say like this, honesty. So I would say honesty is, well, you just tell the truth, right? I don't see it that way anymore. I see that principle of honesty is clarity, lucidity, an ability to see, not think. That seeing in the big books said like this. It says, this awareness is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. That this awareness. See, it's this awareness that sees that narrative that's being talked or said in the head. This is the unsuspected inner resource that I found. This is the place where it says, you've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Fear does not exist there. Mental anxiety does not exist there. Narratives and stories that I create based on past conditioning, belief systems, old ideas, what I've been told, the trauma, this guilt, shame, these are all aspects of this condition of self. And as a friend of mine would say, and I'll quote him, at the third step, it says, being convinced that self, singular, manifested in various ways, is what defeated us. That's plural. That's one condition manifesting a whole bunch of different ways that look like you and you and you and you and you and me. And this is why we can understand people when they're talking. You know, you talk to a new guy and you know exactly what's going to happen. You know what he's saying to you, because you know the conditions driving him. You're able to see it. Our book talks about it in the 11th step and 10th step. It talks about, it gives a real simple instruction. And the instruction is this. And Coyas was great with this. Sorry, I got a little lung thing going on here. He said, in the morning, you're supposed to get up and ask God to direct your thinking, right? And I said, yeah, that's what the book said. And he said, you're supposed to consider your plans for the day. And I said, yeah, that's right. And he said, what are your plans for the day? And so I gave him this list of 13 things I was going to do. And he said, that's not what it's talking about. I said, what? And he said, that's not what it's talking about. I said, what do you mean that's not what it's talking about? And he said, well, he said, your plans for the day are how you're going to be, not what you're going to do. And I'm like, well, can you explain this to me? And so, how am I going to be? Let's say I did the nightly review and it says continue to watch, right? It doesn't say continue to listen. There's a huge difference. When I'm watching, I'm separate from the condition. When I'm listening, I am the condition. It's really hard to be free from the condition when you're identified as the condition. So continue to watch for these manifestations of self, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, right? Then they ask a bunch of questions. And then it says, we ask God's forgiveness. It does not say we ask God to forgive us. It says we ask God's forgiveness. I know what God's forgiveness is. I experienced it when I got released. It's grace. However you want to say it. It's unconditional love. It's the experience of being connected to everything. There's a lot of ways to say it. That's what that forgiveness is. And what it looked like through my eyes and was I was never judged. The condition was judging me. And that right there was revelatory. That's all I ever wanted. That's why I drank. And I didn't know that. I found that out with you guys. You guys introduced me to that. The big book introduced me to that. The wisdom teachers, the elders. Some of those guys had a lot of years, and some of them had, when Nate said what Nate said, you know, to me one time, been around 28 years, never been able to get sober. He said to me, you know, it's really funny. He said, when I fit my life into AA, it seems to work. But when I fit AA into my life, it doesn't work very well. Out of the mouths of babes, right? I mean, you know, I remember Don Pritz saying to me one time, he said, you know, if you listen carefully enough, a liar can tell you the truth. Now, if I'm being triggered all the time, I can't hear that. I'm blocked from that sunlight of the spirit, that intuitive sense they can hear, that hearing, that sixth sense, that this atrophied sense that's vital. It says vital, life and death. I've watched a lot of people die here sober, commit suicide. You know, I was on the brink, believe me. I wanted out. I had so much guilt and remorse after drinking in 19 years because the condition was telling me, you know, what was wrong with me. I was talking to a guy right before the meeting, that guy that went out with 13 years. And we were talking about our kids. And he said, you know, he said, I love my daughter so much. I said, that's not enough, bro. And I said, you know, I got to a point when I was drinking that I'd have to leave the house. I'd go down to my boat. I'd get on my boat. I'd drink myself to sleep. And I'd text my kids and say, I love you very much. Because I couldn't look at them in the eye. This is alcoholism. If I could just not drink, that wouldn't be the case. It's kind of a half-truth we hear around here. And that half-truth needs to be clarified. Because I think it comes a lot from the ignorance of the condition of alcoholism. Sure, we just need to not drink. But somebody tell me how to do that. Phil said it in the beginning of the meeting. He said, hang around. Stick up. We'll talk to you. We'll do the... See, let's be with people, right? I mean, Phil said it. You just don't say, well, just don't drink. Let the guy walk out of the room. Well, he's going to the liquor store if he's like me. In fact, while you're telling him that, he's thinking about, I wish you'd shut up so I can get to the liquor store. So this is the condition. But the real condition, sober, is the bondage of self. This is the condition we need to be released from. And we don't seem to be able to do it, or I didn't. I wasn't able to do it. And this was the blessing in drinking in 19 years, because it let all the air out of the balloon. And I know for a lot of people who haven't done that, that's really hard to understand. But it's not, because we all have that experience, because that's how we got here. We all have that experience. We might not have it with 19 years. That was a tremendous gift. While I was in the midst of it, it was a tremendous curse. It shifted everything in my life, internal and external. I was married for 23 years to a great person. She's sober 37 years. We divorced. That relationship needed to end. There was a lot of normal, what I thought was normal. It was really a dysfunctional relationship. And I'm sure she would admit it too. And we didn't know it because it was normal. So, and she's on her path and I'm on my path. And, you know, Linda and I have been together, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now. A member Al-Anon. And there's an immense sense of gratitude. It's not something I'm trying to manifest. It's just the effect of this awareness. I'm consciously aware of the fact my life has been saved. And I'm also consciously aware of the fact, even if you aren't, that your life's been saved. And that's the blessing here. The blessing here is a deep appreciation. It's not even appreciation. It's a sacredness for life. At 20 years, 19 years, I had a reservation. And you might think it was drinking. I was very clear. In fact, I had a guy tell me one day, he said, I've heard you speak on the first step. He said, you're very clear on the first step. He said, but the second half of the first step, I don't think you're too clear on. And he was absolutely right. I thought if I just managed well with spiritual principles, everything would be fine. It didn't turn out that way. But I didn't know that at the time. What if life doesn't need to be managed? What if it is completely, completely, completely unmanageable? Because it's working perfectly. And Don would say, there are principles, laws, and values that are working perfectly. That realm of the spirit. There's nothing wrong there. And he said, what AA is about is bringing you back into harmony with that. Because we're so out of balance and we don't know it. We are mind bound. We're driven by a thought system that we don't even know we're driven by. We're identified as it. And what happened was once this kind of conscious awareness, if you want to call it that, or intuitive thought or sixth sense or however you want to say, started to wake up, it's atrophied. It was atrophied. It was always there. But it's like, I broke my arm one time and they put it in a cast. And when they took the cast off, my arm just fell to the side because I hadn't used it. This is exactly the same thing. It's not that this thing wasn't here. I got glimpses of it. I had glimpses of it. Bill had glimpses of it. It's written in the big book. He's drunk. He's drinking gin. He's sitting at a table. Abby's talking to him. He said he talked for hours. And what happened? It's very descriptive. Childhood memories rose before me. Now, you think Bill manifested that? Childhood memories rose before me. And he started talking about his grandfather's good-natured contempt for the church folk and how I must listen. And he said something that's just beautiful. That the spheres really had their music. The Winchester Cathedral burst upon him. These are revelatory experiences. Now, he didn't know it at the time. He was too drunk on gin. But it's amazing that he wrote that stuff in the book. It's amazing that he described the things he did. And I'm not saying everybody has to have this big pop experience. I mean, varieties of religious experience are very clear on that. They said, you know, some of these are educational. Coyas would say to me, this is a process, not an event. This is a process, not an event. You will have huge revelatory experiences, events in this process. And they will imprint you just like they did Bill. They'll make a mark on you. You will not forget them. And those type of experiences were like the beginning of this thing. See, it was like, oh, wow, I remember that. I remember that. I remember that. So when it says we develop this thing, right? This is what we're talking about. Growing effectiveness and understanding. Everybody's going to manifest that differently. Some people are going to be a service and GSR, CSR. Some people are going to be, you know, I went through the step Nazi school where everybody was wrong. I was right. You know, I think that's a process. Everybody goes through it, you know. I just think of some of the things that I was told, you know, like another one Pritz said was, he said, listen, Kurt, if I rob you from your pain, you got to start over again from the very beginning. And I thought, well, yeah, you're right. Now that doesn't mean I can't be with you in your pain. But if I rob you, it's a great Al-Anon principle. If I rob you from your pain, you got to start over again from the very beginning. It's how it works. Why? Because struggle is part of the deal. It's just part of the deal. It's part of struggling, you know? But, you know, I needed to come out the other side. The other side looked like this to me. There was a door. And you guys were telling me, see that keyhole in the door? You got to fit through that keyhole. And I'm going, there ain't no way I'm going through that keyhole. And I got pulled through it. And every bone in my body broke. And when I arrived on the other side of the door, I was a different person. You could say it that way. And I was consciously aware of that. And I knew one thing. I knew what not to do based on 20 years experience of managing my life in AA. So when I got in my plumbing truck and went back to work and I drove down the street, I had this intuitive sense, I've done this before. I've done this before. And I'd pull over and I'd pause. I've done this before. It was that whole via negativa. We discover the obstacles in our path. So the pause was this. When Coyas told me to do this, I thought it was stupid. Of course, we think everything's stupid our sponsor tells, right? He said, I want you to pause when agitated or doubtful. I did that for a week. So what happened was, after doing this for a long time, I started to recognize something. And what I recognized was when I paused, when I started to slide into this condition of self, when I pause, I interrupt that energy. And the more I did that, the more I interrupted that energy, the more space it allowed for another energy to come in, intuitive thought. And the pause, what it created was, rather than a reaction from self, it caused an ability to respond, which is one of our promises. I intuitively knew how to handle situations that used to baffle me. It wasn't coming from my head anymore. So it's a practice. It's a daily reprieve. It's a way of living. It's an integrated part of the way we are in the world. Now, life has gotten so much easier. It is not a struggle. And one of the things that was removed for me that I never had removed was I had a plan B. And my plan B wasn't drinking again. My plan B was this. And I could never get rid of it. If it gets bad enough, I'll just take myself out. That was my reservation. And that went away 13 years ago. That was my hidden reservation. See, my last vestige of control. Now, that is the last thing that I would want now. Life is too rich. People are too interesting. There's so much to know. There's so much to experience. There's so many places to go. It's full. And I think this is what the big book, and I think this is what AA has to offer. And I think that because I'm experiencing that. And it's not like I got to worry about 20 years down the line. I don't have to worry about anything. What I have to do is just do what I'm doing, what I've been doing. I get up tomorrow, I'll do the same thing I do. I'll go down to the beach. I'll look at the ocean and I'll say, well, you're blessed to be living here. You're not in the penitentiary in Texas talking to guys and identified as 378746. You're not watching the sunset over a guard tower with a guy with a shotgun or, you're not waiting on commissary. My big day was visiting time and commissary. Commissary was you got to go to get your cigarettes and all that kind of stuff. And the whole thing was, my dad, it's really funny. My dad would come out to see me in prison. It never dawned on me. It dawned on me when I did some inventory, but it never dawned on me. See, I wasn't concerned about my dad coming out to prison and stuff like that. I never even really thought about it. What I thought about was who's coming? It was very centered on self. It was who's coming, Oh, they're not coming. How come? It was just demanding. And I remember, thinking, you know what? I didn't give a damn about my dad coming out to prison. I didn't care one bit to see him. He was a messenger boy for me. He was just telling me who was going to be on my visitors list, what was going on in the free world. See, I didn't know that. It wasn't something I was trying to do. I just didn't know. That's the view I was looking for. And when it dawned on me, my dad took 7 hours to drive out to the penitentiary, 3 hours out, 3.5 hours out, 3.5 hours back. My dad, they worried about me getting killed in there. During the time I was in the penitentiary, there was a killing every day for 938 days in all the penitentiaries in Texas. They worried about me. It didn't dawn on me one bit. I'm worried about getting cigarettes. See, this is like asleep thinking you're awake. And when I realized that with my pops, it changed everything. When I made amends to pops, it changed everything. It changed everything to the point that when he passed because of lung cancer, my brothers called me and said, you need to fly to Houston because we can't do this. You need to come and do this. And I stayed with him the last 30 days. And it was a good death. If you want to call it that, it's a transition. It's not a death. And I was able to do that. Now I'm the sensitive feeling one, remember, right? I'm the one that, when grandma and grandpa came to see me, when I was a kid, and then they left after 2 weeks, I'm the only one bawling in the front yard. Of course, I think there's something wrong with me because nobody else is crying because they're leaving. See, I'm interpreting that in my head. I don't see that I'm deeply touched by their leaving. Yeah. So it's really interesting. I think there's a bunch of people on here that I saw come on that I talk to on a regular basis. I see them in meetings, and they're engaged. And I couldn't will myself to be engaged. It was a process. And I just didn't know the fruits that I'd get from it. That was the problem. See, I really did not know. And that's why I think we're just so blessed here. There's a part in the book, it says, sorry, I don't mean to quote the book, but it's just popping out tonight. It's in We Agnostics. and says, without knowing it, this is the key. Without knowing it, this is the key. I've been brought here by a certain kind of faith. Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that I'd been brought here by a certain kind of faith. And then they say, this kind of faith is the God of reason. You believe in your thinking. And you've depended on that thinking. And faith's been involved all along. See, I thought they meant something else by faith. I thought they meant church, God, whatever. Without knowing, you've been brought here by a certain kind of faith. This dependency on the condition of self is what drove me. I was the passenger in the car. It's not that I'm not responsible. There's a phase you got to pass through where you're responsible for your actions. But then there's another phase that's really crucial and really not talked about, where I'm accountable. I'm accountable. If I make a mistake, which isn't a mistake, is a mistake. Welcome to the human condition. See, it doesn't have a narrative of guilt, shame, remorse, self-pity, morbid reflection. It's a mistake. And the corrective measure can come out of the mistake. It's the only place it can come from. So this is why I was saying, I'm not going to talk about a lot of good and bad. I'm talking about both. And we hear it in, I don't want to get in. I try to keep this in AA, but we hear it in every one of the wisdom traditions. Every one of them. On my door, I have a thing on the door. I have a little thing here, Two Trees Insight Guidance. But on the door, it says, committed to many dialects of one language. In AA, we call it the language of the heart. But where it says, be quick to see where religious people are right. It doesn't say be quick to see that religious people are right. Where? It has a resonance. The truth identifies itself. It doesn't need my help. It's true because it's true. And once that resonance gets developed, that sense of discernment, sixth sense, it's here. You can hear it. My first meeting I went to after I got released in 86, the guy George spoke. I think he had 25 years. I could still see his face in my mind's eye. And I remember leaving the meeting and somebody said, how was the meeting? I said, Jesus, it was the best meeting I'd been in. He said, what'd he say? I said, I don't have a clue. See, at the time, I didn't know George bypassed my head and talked to my heart. See, I didn't have that language. I didn't have that insight. But that's what George did. Why do I know that? Because it imprinted me. I can see his face. I could see him in my mind's eye. It imprinted me. See, it has a certain quality to it. So that's what I wanted to talk about tonight. I think that's what's important. Now, for our newer members, this sounds like Spanish. I know that. In fact, I have a friend that sometimes when I talk, he goes, after the meeting, he'll go, my name's Chris. I'll interpret anything Kurt said tonight. But for our newer members, let me just say it this way. Look, you can't figure out how to get out of this you're in. And just know that. Just know that's what you can't do. And if you hear somebody in a meeting that resonates with you, go up to them and say, look, I don't know how to do this. Show me. Show me, walk with me. This is how this thing works. You know, they made a lot of mistakes in the beginning. You know, Bill, he was pulling guys off the bar stool. He was talking about the solution. He was told, I don't talk about the solution, talk about the problem. Talk about the problem. Identify with these guys. You know, there, we have a wealth of information. You know, I'm going to close with this. What I got, Phil, about a couple minutes? The problem is very clear from the solution. The problem is not clear at all from the problem. So this is out of Bill's emotional sobriety letter. So I read this, and this thing struck me deeply because I saw something that I never saw. And I was in a workshop with a guy, two guys, and it was never even mentioned. And it was profound to me, and I want to read it. Just two paragraphs. He said, I kept asking myself why the 12 steps can't work to release my depression. By the hour, I stared at the St. Francis prayer. It's better to comfort than to be comforted. Here was the formula, all right, but why didn't it work? So let's make a clarification. That St. Francis prayer was written after his revelatory experience, not before. Make me an instrument of this peace. Well, obviously he knew what the peace was because he had an experience with it. That's where the prayer was written from. We got to put it in the right context. Next paragraph. Suddenly, I realized what the matter was. This is revelatory. My basic flaw had always been dependence. Almost absolute dependence on people and circumstances to supply me with prestige, security, and the like. Failing to get these things according to my perfectionist dreams and specifications, I had fought for them. And when defeat came, so did my depression. Now I'm going to read it the way I see it. Suddenly, I realized what the matter was. Self's basic flaw had always been dependence, almost absolute dependence on people and circumstances to supply self with prestige, security, and the like. Failing to get these according to self's perfectionist dreams and specifications, self had fought for them. And when defeat came, so did depression. I'm not identified as the condition. It was written from the condition. That's just my view on it. We all have our views, and I've been asked to share mine tonight. So thank you, Phil, for having me, and thank you guys for listening.